Welcome to the IRIS podcast. You are listening to a talk as part of the Emerging Technologies Conference. This talk was recorded on the 25th of February 2011. Fraser Spears, Director of Connected Flow, if you can do it in schools, could you do it in social services?
I'm just going to tell you a story today of something that we did last year at my school, which is called Cedar School of Excellence. We are, we're an independent school. We were founded in 1999, so we're a very ancient school that was founded only a few years ago. And we are an independent school, and this is what our building looks like. A little dark, but it is a former businessman's club in Greenock. It's a kind of Clyde Coast mafia session here. Greenock doesn't do posh, really. We're kind of an anomaly as an independent school. But we're a straight-through school. We have pupils from ages 5 through to 17, so we're... We've kids at all ages and stages. And what we did, in short, to kind of line up this talk, is we decided back in January or February of 2010 that we were going to deploy the iPad to every pupil in the school. And I really mean every pupil from age 5 through to 17 and all the staff as well. So I'm going to tell you the story about that. But before we get into the iPad side of it and the technology and all the new things that we did there, I want to give you some of the background, just to give you an idea of what the background was to the way we were thinking before we came to this decision. This is a book that's been very influential to most of our teachers at Cedars. You'll maybe have heard of Howard Gardner from his theory of multiple intelligences. And in this book here, what Gardner says is he kind of looks out to the future and he asks himself, what capacities would pupils need to engage with the future? And I put this quote on because it's my favorite one from the whole book, where it says that the future will demand capacities that until now have been mere options. And I know in education that a lot of teachers have looked at technology as an optional skill for them. And I think that time has passed in education, and that time might be passing in social services as well. I really believe that every teacher now needs to be completely engaged with IT. And it's one of the tragedies of the situation with post-probation teachers in Scotland, that a lot of the young teachers that have come out do not have jobs and do not have a place in the workforce at the moment, because these are the people that we need to have in to bring these technologies forward. The second document, of course, that dominates our life at the moment is Curriculum for Excellence. And we at Cedars, even though the government stole our name for the document, we're called Cedars School of Excellence, and we were around before this document. We love Curriculum for Excellence. We think it's excellent. It's timely. It's modern. It's the kind of thinking that we think is very well aligned with the way that the society is now and the way that we think society needs to be in the future. One of the things relative to the iPad that we think about Curriculum for Excellence is it's important to realize that it talks about experiences in school as well as outcomes. Gavin talked about the experience of being a staff member. The experience of being a pupil in school is important too now. We're invited to consider that, and we're invited to deliver certain kinds of experiences in school, whereas we were perhaps previously only focused on the outcomes. So a little bit of history in technology for us. We started in 1999 with five of these computers, which you may remember as the original iMac. And then we replaced them a few years later. They did great service for us, and we replaced them with these machines, these white Intel-based iMacs in 2006, and then later we introduced laptops. So by this point, by 2008, we had a ratio of about one computer to every four pupils, which is where it stands in most local authorities today, I think, about that ratio. But we came to a point where we had a bit of a crisis. And that crisis looked a little bit like this, that we had significant demand for ICT. Our teachers had embraced the idea of teaching with technology. It had always been part of our culture in Cedars, and our teachers had increasingly embraced it as we opened our secondary department in 2005-06. But our supply of ICT was like this. It was mostly flat. So we had to decide what we were going to do about this problem. So come December 2009, we got together and with our teachers and the senior management, and we asked ourselves, well, what options do we have? And the two options were basically to buy more of the same, or we knew of this school in Bolton in England called ESA Academy, who had, you may have heard of them in the news, they did a one-to-one iPod Touch for all their pupils, and they had some remarkable results. In particular, Their headline number is that they got 99% A-star to C passes at GCSE the year after they deployed that. So we were kind of in between these two devices. Teachers hadn't been totally happy with the experience of laptops. I think everybody who owns one knows that battery technology is not where it needs to be, and weight and size and all that kind of stuff is not quite exactly what we're looking for. But we also had concerns about the smaller device, particularly that it didn't have very powerful applications like a word processor. You couldn't connect it to a projector for a presentation, all of these kind of things. And we had a couple of quick considerations. At the same time, there's a very strong fashion in educational technology at the moment for this idea that we should let children bring in their own iPhones and have that as kind of the first line technology in schools. And, you know, we're in an independent school. We're supposed to be rich, right? This is a photograph that I took in one of my classrooms, and it shows less than half of the class with an iPhone or any kind of smartphone device. Many of these devices in this photograph are actually broken in some way, which gave me pause as much as anything. But we rejected this idea that we would let the kids bring in their own technology as the front line of IT. Certainly, it's okay as a supplementary, but as the front line, we were concerned about it. And we were concerned for four reasons. The first was a dramatically wide range of device capabilities. You saw some phones there that were iPhones, very powerful, and there were some phones there that were very basic feature phones. We felt that that was going to be a problem in the classroom. And provision was also uneven. So what the teachers told me when we talked about this was they said, if you do this, what's going to happen is that the pupils who've got iPhones will do all the IT, and the pupils who don't have iPhones will just look over their shoulders. Now, it's hard enough, as somebody who does the IT provision in the school, it's hard enough, I know, to deal with a set of hardware that is not the same. You want to have as much consistency as you can. But not only with student-owned devices, not only do you have a less than consistent hardware set, but it constantly changes. This is the sort of, I got a new phone for my birthday problem. So you don't own the devices, you can't test on them, you can't reproduce the set that you have, and the set's constantly changing at the same time. And at the end of the day, what we felt was that teachers already have to differentiate their lesson for the age and stage of a pupil. If you go down this road, you ask them to differentiate yet again for which device the pupils have in their pocket. And we thought that was just far too much effort to put onto teachers when we could do something at the level of the school. And at the end of the day, this is the problem, right? This great quote from Douglas Adams that says, we're stuck with technology when what we really want is just something that works. And I think if you've ever been in schools, you'll see a lot of technology. You might not see so many things that actually just work. Speaking of things that just work, about a month after we had that conversation, the iPad was announced, and we were very clear very quickly that all the considerations that we had between the choosing laptops or choosing the iPod Touch as a sort of pocket device, this was the perfect thing right in the middle of where we wanted everything to be. And it was probably a day or a day and a half after we came back to school after the announcement that we decided that that was the device we wanted to deploy. Now that sounds dramatic and fast, but we'd been looking for a long time and we had yet to find a device. And then the device came along and we knew it when we saw it. But of course there's preparation, right? There's all kinds of technical preparation. We can talk about things like Wi-Fi. We can talk about coverage and bandwidth and all of these things. We didn't have many problems with that, except to note that these devices, once you start plugging them onto your network, they gobble up data. People are on YouTube, they're using the web. You know, when you give people something, they use it. And I've always tried to drive it as part of our IT culture that that's not a problem, that it's okay for people to use the stuff you give them. So we had to beef up our internet connection a little bit, but it wasn't too hard. I heard talk earlier in one of the workshops about security and considerations about privacy and confidentiality. One of the really powerful things about the iPad that we found is that it has the ability to be controlled in certain ways. Not completely controlled, but there are some locks you can put on it. And one of the things that we were able to do was we were able to use this tool called iPhone Configuration Utility, which let us deploy a kind of general profile that locked a certain number of settings, and then we had individual profiles that configured the device automatically for the pupils. Some of the things that we can do is we can push out things like our Wi-Fi settings, calendar subscriptions, and security policies onto the device as well. So we were able to force everybody to have a password to unlock their own iPad, which gives everybody a kind of sense of ownership and a sense of security about what goes on there. And then the individual profile was just about their email settings, basically. When we got them delivered, this is what it looks like. If you ever plan anything like this, plan some time just to unpack the things. Four-person days it took us to unpack these things. So four people working a whole day to take them out of their boxes, take the cases out of their own packets. You know, they're in cardboard boxes, then they're in plastic, then they're, you know. And then how'd you get rid of that stuff? It took us a while to get rid of it. But on the left here, you see this is my sort of activation station with a huge cup of coffee. And it was just one iPad after another production line, plugging it in, applying these settings. But we were probably the first people ever to do this on this scale in a school. So it was, we ran into a lot of corner cases that people today might not have such a problem with. But we learned a lot in a very short period of time. But more importantly and more interestingly to me than that is what did we do for teaching preparation? How did we prepare the teachers? How did we prepare the sort of organization to accept this new innovation? And I have to be honest with you that Cedars isn't staffed by an army of IT experts. Right? I'm the only person, I'm a computing teacher in the school. I'm also the frontline tech support person. I'm also the IT strategy person. I'm everything there is to do with computers. And I only work there 3 days a week. And I teach every single day as well. So we have a very small amount of effort and have to make sure that we use the right things that minimize the amount of effort that it costs us. But technology has always been part of the culture of our school. I said that we opened in 1999 with five computers, and we only had 30 kids. So technology in education has always been a big part of our culture. It's not to say that everybody has to use technology in every lesson, but you don't get to be a teacher in our school if you're a technology refuser. It's really as simple as that. So when the iPad arrived in the UK, what we did was the first dozen iPads that came off the truck at the Glasgow Apple store, we got them and we gave them to the teachers, and they lived with them from May through the summer, took them as their own devices and just investigated. They lived with it and investigated the device, got to understand its capabilities. And we also gave the teachers a little budget in the iTunes store to go and examine what kind of applications would be appropriate for their teaching. And that's really important because the teachers have to have a sense of ownership about this. Very often in educational technology, what's happened is that people have come in and said, you guys should be podcasting, or you guys should be having a blog, or you should be having a wiki or something. And our policy at Cedars is always that we buy the technology that our teachers are crying out for. And if our teachers aren't crying out for technology, we've got a much bigger problem than just deciding which device to buy. We've got a much bigger cultural problem there. So our teachers mostly enthusiastically embraced this as an approach to teaching, because they knew that problem, because we had let it get to a crisis point first, and then this was the solution, and our teachers enthusiastically embraced it. It's my favorite slide of all time, the Riot Act. We decided we were not going to write the rules before we knew what the rules should be. This is a whole new thing, and we didn't have many other schools. In fact, we didn't know of any other schools who had taught one-to-one with the iPad specifically, to use as a model for what we'd done. So we decided that we were going to take our hands off a little bit. And the only rule that we wanted teachers to follow was that we'd use the iPad everywhere that it was appropriate and nowhere that it wasn't appropriate. Very often what you'll see in schools is you'll see something where, you know, computers are bought for a purpose. You know, a bunch of Macs for a video editing suite. And unless you're editing video, you don't get to go and use those computers. We heard this morning about somebody who, in their school days, they didn't even get to see the computer until they were doing six-year studies maths. We wanted to avoid pigeonholing the iPad into, you know, a digital textbook or, you know, a reading book or a games machine or anything like that. We knew that there would be a lot of flexibility in our approach to what we could do with it. So we decided to be a little bit hands-off in that approach. And I think that's worked out very well for us. Here are just a few pictures of launch day. You'll see some of these pictures come back again. But it was a particularly smooth launch. We've had launches of technology before, and they've sometimes been a bit problematic, but this has been the easiest one ever. And it's also been the largest one ever, which tells me something as the IT guy. But what about the classroom impact? This is the most important feature of any mobile technology device, is battery life. And with the iPad and with some of the other tablets that are coming out now, the battery life problem is essentially solved. For the first time ever, we've got devices that will last a whole school day and into the evening without rationing your use of the device or having to keep it recharged at any point during the day. And that, our teachers tell me, has been the most transformational aspect of the whole thing, is that we're not rearranging the classroom around what the laptops need anymore. We arrange the classroom around what the learning has to be. And that is itself a huge change. Because the iPad is mobile, it's mobile in a new kind of way. It's not just mobile the way this laptop is mobile. It can go in a bag and get carried. But it can be shared. It can be turned around. It can be handed over to someone else. People always ask me, well, how do you collaborate, you know, on documents with an iPad? And my answer is always, well, you just move your chair. You sit next to somebody else. And it's incredibly humane. I mean, if you imagine this picture with laptops in place, right? There's a wall between two people, you know, or they're side by side looking into the laptop, not talking to each other. This is a very humane way to do a very high technology lesson at the same time as teaching about something else. One of my personal motivations for one-to-one technology, and I've wanted to do this for 10 years now, is that I wanted to remove the ceremony around using computers. We've heard a lot about that already. But now that we have these iPads as a classroom resource, it's interesting to me to see how they're used so ubiquitously in the school, but that they also fade into the background. You know, they're just another resource in the classroom, the same way that paint or paper or a book or the interactive whiteboard or a game, a jigsaw puzzle, or the iPad. Right? It's at that level of ubiquity in the school. It's not a special deal to go and get the iPad. Because of that, what we find is the teachers use them much more. There's no kind of friction between going from a paper lesson into a technology lesson. And it allows for a lot of differentiation in the classroom because some pupils can be doing one thing, some kids can pull out an iPad. You know, people ask me, how much do the children use the iPad? And I say, well, I can't measure that because if there's paper on the desk and an iPad, is that an iPad lesson or is it a paper lesson? It's actually both all the time. And we find that very powerful because it means that there's no kind of set-up time and tear-down time for a technology lesson. It's just the same kind of lesson as any other. We're just at the start of looking at electronic books as opposed to paper books. So what the teachers tell me about this, I haven't looked into it too much myself, but what I'm told is that children who are dyslexic, because you can change the font size on an electronic book, what they find is that if you can declutter the visual field, then these children can start to engage with the book in a way that they previously couldn't. Second thing that you can do in these devices is you can have books that have embedded video and audio inside them. So for language learning, it's very powerful. You've got the textbook, but the textbook speaks to you now as well. This is one of my favorite quotes from one of our English teachers. She said that for the first time in her career, she's had to enforce the word limit on standard grade English essays, which is 800 words, by the way, and she got essays handed in that were 3,000 words. Why? Because when you're writing an essay, there's a lot of pressure to keep it short because you're going to have to rewrite it 3 or 4 times. Right? You do it on the iPad, you're not going to ever rewrite it. You're going to edit it in place to have a final finished piece of work. We could have a whole day on the transformation in the art and drama class that's come from the iPad. So many different uses. What you're seeing here is that this girl's using the iPad as a digital light box to draw from. She's drawing with pencil, but what the iPad lets you do is it lets you zoom in, zoom out, rotate, look at things in a different way, and it's full color, full resolution. It's not a photocopy. There's, of course, drawing on the iPad itself as well. This girl here, her name's Megan, she recently took a highly commended prize, which is a third place prize in a local art competition in Greenock with her iPad art. Don't think they'd ever had an iPad submission before, but she came third in that competition. Applications in drama as well. One of the things about the physical shape of the iPad is that it goes into places that you wouldn't take a laptop. You know, it's hard to imagine somebody holding up a laptop and scrolling through a Word document with a trackpad to do a dramatic reading like this for their class, but you see that all the time with the iPad. This is a drawing that one of our art teacher, Jenny Oakley, she did this on the iPad. And this is an application called Brushes. It's a finger painting application. But what you can do with brushes is really powerful, is you can do this. So when Jenny's teaching an art lesson, what she would normally do is she would be drawing this and trying to talk about the technique at the same time as drawing it, which is quite demanding. Don't think I could do either one of those two things, and she has to do both at once. But what you can do in brushes is you can export the actions that you took to make a painting, and on your Mac you can turn it into a video, and you can play that video back at full speed or half speed or anywhere in between. And she can use this and she can talk about the shading in the eye. She can talk about the way she did the iris and all this kind of stuff with a video resource rather than having to do it right at the same time. People often say to me, well, surely the iPad's only for content consumption, it's just for reading the web pages. But these are art, pieces of art that our pupils did probably within, I think, 2 months of starting school again in August. Pupils were producing stuff like this that's winning prizes now. Don't let Andy tell you the iPad's just for content consumption. Here's another example of a lesson that's been transformed by the iPad. This was teaching on the water cycle, you know, where river water evaporates, clouds rain, and it runs back to the river and so on. It's very appropriate for a place like Greenock, where it's both on the river and raining all the time. Now, if you think about that, the way that kind of lesson happened when I was at school, you know, it was go and read this book or read a piece of writing about the water cycle and then write an answer about it. That was my school days. You fast forward 10 years and it's much the same, except this time, you know, we'll keep your last draft and then when we get a shot in the computers, we'll print it out, right? And that was the kind of technological upgrade of the year 2000. But in 2010, what Andrew did was he said to his class, he said, go and find out about the water cycle. Use anything you've got on this iPad and then come back and explain to me how the water cycle affects Greenock. Use any application, any website that helps you get this point across to me. This is a program called Animation Creator on the iPad. What the boy who did this, he went onto Google Images, found a picture of Greenock, put it in the background of his animation, and then he animated the water cycle actually happening over Greenock on the iPad. He got people writing about it. He got people doing keynote presentations like this one about it. Another one that I really liked was this one here, where a boy went onto the Maps application on the iPad, took a screenshot of Greenock, brought it into this program called Moodboard, which is a digital collage application, and then he just dropped clouds all over it and annotated the clouds to show where these things would happen in the water cycle as it went around Greenock. The iPad band, yeah, I got a little video clip of this because it has to be seen to be believed, but this is a constant theme that we're finding with the iPad now, is that things that you would normally buy separate classroom resources for are now sort of becoming software for the iPad. I'll show you the video first. There's some sound from this. To spot the child who's disabled? I don't think you were. I think that's very powerful. You know, there's a child, one of those four boys there, can hardly walk up the stairs in our school. Doesn't have any kind of physical coordination, but can play in the band, same as everybody else. It's incredibly powerful. Because the battery life is solved, we can go out of school now as well. Our art teacher took a class to Kelvin Grove, and she sent them this document before they went. And this was her kind of digital Easter egg hunt. The kids. So she sent them out of school, they took their iPads, somehow survived taking iPads out in public in Glasgow, and went around, gathered all kinds of information, various kinds of things, and she said at the end of the day she couldn't find the kids. They weren't back, they weren't in the shop. Where were they? They were still around the museum, digging up more information, putting it in their iPads, emailing these documents back to the teacher. It's a very Curriculum for Excellence kind of outcome, but I think when you take Curriculum for Excellence at its word, I think this is where it leads you, is to things like this. There's no Curriculum for Excellence textbook. Neither should there be. We have a take-home program. This is a bit frequently asked question. We do let kids take them home. We plan to ship the iPads to kids in August and then maybe start it about October or something. I was being cautious. I'm an IT guy, I'm cautious. But teachers came to me on the Tuesday and they said, I've already set homework for my kids on their iPad. Can they take it home yet? And I said, no, not really. So by Thursday, I had a hastily written take-home agreement that we sent home. And you've never seen return rates on a form like that before. You know, normally 10% come back, 100% come back, almost 100%. So we had two policies, right? We didn't have such a formal signing ceremony as this, but we had a take-home policy, an acceptable use policy, and a home use agreement. The acceptable use policy is a very legal kind of document that explains what acceptable and unacceptable use is. But then we also wrote an owner's guide, which is much more a kind of humane how-to guide for how to do these various things, what we expect you to do with the iPad, what we expect you not to do with it, And that's been very successful. People have understood that in a way that they maybe wouldn't understand all the detail of the acceptable use policy as well. So just over half the school are eligible to take the iPad home, and of that 56%, almost everybody does. The remaining 8% is made up from two families, each of which have a pair of twins at 10 years old. So they're responsible for a lot more technology, and they're both all right at the very youngest end of the scale. So I don't blame them for being a little cautious at that age as well. Discussions of the iPad always degenerate into what are your favourite apps, and I've got eight here that I want to just mention how we use them. We use many more, and you know, I might have to update this slide every week because new apps are coming out all the time. But I thought CHD is a mind mapping program. If you ever use the mind mapping technique on paper, it's a little tedious because you get to the edges of the paper, or you have a massive piece of paper that you can't put in your school bag. With the iPad, you've got a massive piece of paper that folds up into something this size, which is wonderful. Course Notes is a note-taking program that has some nice sharing features. In particular, one of the nice features is that if a pupil's off school, what they can do is their friend can send notes from their iPad to the absent pupil's iPad over Bluetooth. So there's a lot of sharing that can happen with that application. I showed you the Moodboard Pro examples with the museum and the water cycle. That's a great sort of digital collage, pasteboard kind of application. Keynotes. Huge. Keynote on the iPad was probably one of the applications that sold the device to us, because we hadn't seen any devices this small before that came with that kind of power in the software. And we think that presentation skills are really important for kids in the future, much more so than, say, word processing skills. Presentation skills, everybody has to do them now. I've had to step up my game a little bit with that as well recently. And we think that's incredibly powerful, and it's a great application. We use it all the time from probably primary three upwards. Math Bingo is a simple bingo game that you cover the squares using by answering math puzzles. We've had examples of kids in primary one who are doing maths up to 10, even before the teachers introduced the idea of 9 and 10, because they're so keen to participate in these games. You've maybe heard of games-based learning as a sort of theme from Learning and Teaching Scotland. We're finding that games-based learning is almost happening by default as we put these devices out there and teachers bring in their new ideas and ideas from their own kids at home and integrate them into the classroom. The three little girls you saw lying on the ground drawing the letter A, this was the program they were using, a program called Pocket Phonics. One of the things that this lets you do is it lets you draw one letter and get feedback on whether you did it right or not. Your school days and mine were more like do a whole page and then the teacher will tell you how you got it wrong. But this thing gives you instant feedback. And we're finding that in many places where the feedback loop is much shorter, so you can learn much quicker, get feedback on your results. You've seen Google Maps on the web. Google Earth is a great application, and it's fantastic on the iPad for anything that involves location. And finally, I already mentioned electronic books. iBooks is incredibly powerful for many of those things that we want to do. So just to wrap up, where are we? We have successfully kind of changed our organization in a way that we didn't expect we were going to. You know, we thought it would be just kind of buy these things. We'll use them for whatever. Use them for the web and a bit of word processing. But it's kind of, you know, steamrolled everything that we've done. And the amount of innovation that's coming in is incredible. One-to-one device deployment is the new baseline. I think if any school you talk to that's done this, it's inconceivable that you could go back to having the computers 1 hour a week. We think it's very well aligned with Curriculum for Excellence. The experiences that you can have in school now with devices like this, as well as the educational outcomes. The teacher's always still in the middle, right? It's not that we're replacing teachers with iPads. Any teacher that can be replaced by an iPad should be, but we don't have any teachers like that. And the innovation, you saw the iPad band. Surprise to me, you can't go to your head teacher and you can't sell us as well, we'll get a band if we get these iPads, right? You sell it from sort of educational purposes, but we're finding it fills in lots of little gaps. We can do lots of fun things with it as well. So thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. These are my details. If you want to get in touch, follow me on Twitter or anything like that. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.